week. And this Friday is, of course, the Transgender Day of Remembrance. It's a solemn day for mourning the 36 transgender people murdered in the United States this year alone, most of whom were Black or Brown transgender women. Today we honor them. To their friends, family, and community, we send our love and deep condolences. And we send hope for a future free from transphobic violence. I can't possibly know what these losses feel like to our trans brothers and sisters, nor is it my place to speak on this community's behalf. Suffice it to say, the very need for a Transgender Day of Remembrance at all speaks volumes about how much work we have yet to do. May their lives be remembered fondly. May their identities be honored. May their deaths move us to action, and may they each rest in peace. I ask you now to join me in a moment of silence in their honor. I will end with this: Black trans lives matter. Thank you. Colleagues, this is the Wednesday, November 18th, 2020 morning session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, would you please call the roll?
Good morning, Mayor. Hugh Daly.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Volume.
Here.
The volume.
Wheeler.
Are you here, Mayor?
Yes, sorry, the volume was turned off. Yes, here, I'm still here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the City's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and Channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to Council by emailing the Council Clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The Council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your continued patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this challenging situation to conduct the City's business. We'll now hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Finally, please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
Thank you. First up is communications. Looks like we only have one individual today, Keelan.
Request of John Carter to address council regarding election results and Portland's future.
Good morning.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, you sound good.
Cool. Well, first I'd like to say, Ted, congratulations on getting re-election. I will say this, Portland needs a renaissance. a phoenix rising from the ashes, creative vision, a balance, the conditions laid down for resiliency rather than dependency of our people. Brilliant, compassion ideas allowed to shine through. Ted, I look back at your 4 years, and I see someone with good intentions bogged down by fear, by politics, by the expectations of your personal experience, a technocratic world lined with numbers and figures, the quantitative without the qualitative, the dollar without the human behind it. Is the city better off than it was 4 years ago? Rather than putting Band-Aids on gaping wounds, rather than copying what other Democrats do, my advice to you would be to break your inner creator free. That requires tapping into your creative mind that is there, one that has been discouraged by your social and political peers. How amazing it would be to tap into your heart space. I remember in the spring primary, I was reading Willamette Week, and you were talking about how you were taking ukulele lessons. So I ask, how are those going? Strum it along, sing about the people of Portland, our spirit, hopes, dreams, fears, creativity, our potential to become a beacon of light within the darkness of this country. Sing to hash out ideas, sing to bring out your vulnerability, sing so we can see you, sing so I can see you. So Ted, I ask again, how are those ukulele lessons going? You accessing your creative heart through the instrument? The creative mind that lies buried within might be what delivers our renaissance. This time is critical. The village is suffering. What comes over these next 4 years, I don't know. I do have ideas I'd like to talk to you about in the future. So reach out if you're interested. Maybe we can sing together. Thank you.
Well, John, before you put that offer on the table, you better hear my singing voice. But thank you. I appreciate your testimony, and make sure we have your email address, and I'll go ahead and reach out to you.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I will say this, that, you know, just sing. It doesn't matter the quality of your voice. It doesn't matter if you're good. As long as it comes from your heart, that's all that matters.
Well, actually, to that point, because it's a good one, I didn't take up the ukulele because I'm a musical genius. I took it up because I wanted to spend time with my daughter during the pandemic. And it's actually something she was interested in doing. And so we've done it together. And the fact of the matter is I'm really bad at it, but we still play it and we're getting better and we're muddling along together. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's, I love that.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your testimony, John.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You bet. Take care. And that gets us to the consent agenda. Have any items been pulled off the consent agenda, Keelan?
Yes, item 910 was requested to be pulled for discussion.
910, very good. Call the roll on the remainder of the consent agenda.
You, Daly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. And I might do something slightly unconventional here since everything else is a first reading or a time certain and we're a little ahead of schedule. Why don't we get to 910 if we have representatives from the Water Bureau who are here, the item that was just pulled off the consent agenda. Commissioner Fritz, do we have somebody here who can speak to this item?
We do indeed.
Very good. Keelan,
David,
why don't you David call 9?
All right, sorry.
Sure. Keelan, can you call 910, please, and then I'll turn it over to Commissioner Fritz.
Authorize the Portland Water Bureau to enter into an agreement with Dean and Patricia Walter and pay consideration in the amount of $55,000 for costs to construct a new well.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Colleagues, as you know, the Water Bureau is in the process of designing a new filtration facility on 95 acres of property the Bureau owns in East Multnomah County. The Bureau is proposing to pay $55,000 for costs to relocate a new well on an adjacent property to reduce potential project impacts. The Water Bureau has worked with the property owners to find agreeable solutions to concerns through the public engagement process and one-on-one meetings. And while David Peters is here, it would probably be good to hear the public testimony so that we can address any specific concerns. Does that work for you, Matt?
I'm sorry. Yeah, it does, Commissioner Fritz. Sorry, I was muted.
So, Keelan, could you please invite whoever pulled to speak?
Oh, yes, of course. Dee Walker.
Good morning.
Dee, are you able to unmute? It looks like you might still be muted. If you push star six on your phone.
Great. Thank you, Keelan. Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, you sound good, Dee.
All right, and my name is Dee White. It's not Dee Walker. There's just so much that's unethical about this ordinance. I'll just start off by, it's just so unethical. It's so typical and sleazy of the Water Bureau in the city of Portland, thinking that y'all are above the law, so you can just extract money from ratepayers only to turn around and pay for harm that you do to ratepayers. In the impact statement on this ordinance, it says that the owner claims the geotechnical work completed has already impacted their supply of water. The Water Bureau rejects this claim but acknowledges that there's a risk. So y'all are paying this family $55,000 because you destroyed their well back in May of 19, destroyed the drinking water doing your geotechnical dig for a filtration project that is not needed, not necessary, costly, and has no health benefit. So the fact that you don't even mention that you claim responsibility for doing what you did and making these people sign on the dotted line in order to get their water back, plus you're making them sign a W-9, which means income, which means you're going to pay. They're going to pay taxes on this money that you're giving them to dig another well. No responsibility for in case something happens and there's problems with the well. They will be responsible for paying for all that. They did not receive any compensation during this last year and a half for having to buy drinking water, because the drinking water that they had, thanks to the Water Bureau pouring a bunch of binders down into the geotechnical drill, it contaminated their water. They've had to take shorter showers. No compensation has been given to them for this. And now you're just holding them hostage, making them sign on the dotted line, signing away all their rights to reclaim what they've lost. It's so unethical. No, it's not illegal, but it's unethical, and it's just shameful that the Water Bureau continues to harm citizens, including our high lead levels, which you refuse to address. That's all.
Thank you, Dee.
Could I ask a follow-up question of Dee? Dee, this is a negotiated settlement. And that means this isn't a settlement that has been agreed to by the family that you just described. Are you recommending we reject the settlement that the family themselves have agreed to?
No, the family has been, they are being forced to do this in order to get their water back because they can't afford to sue you guys or dig a new well. So yes, it's a settlement, but it's a crappy settlement because they've got to sign, you know, they're signing all their rights away when, you know, so I'm saying you need to renegotiate this and make it so it's fair.
Well, I just want to be clear. By the time these settlements get to the consent agenda, this is agreed to by all parties. They have every right to not agree to it or to hold out or to sue or do whatever they want. This is a compromise, mutually agreed to settlement. Why wouldn't we accept it?
You're ignoring all the points I just made, Mayor Wheeler. They've got to pay taxes on this. They are signing away any claims for anything that might happen while they're drilling this well. that the Water Bureau is not going to be responsible for, plus the fact that the Water Bureau is not claiming responsibility. It is just so unethical for them to do this. They're the ones who did it. And now the Walters are having to sign saying, oh, we admit, we will say, oh, it's not y'all's responsibility in order to get our water back.
All right. Well, you're certainly entitled to your opinion, but at some point you have to trust their judgment as well.
I never trust the Water Bureau, Mayor Wheeler.
I'm not talking about the Water Bureau. I'm talking about the party on whose behalf you are speaking. All right. So, Commissioner Fritz, back to you.
I know that's all, Mayor. Thank you. You made the points that I was going to make. Thank you. So we could just go to the vote unless anybody has any other questions.
Colleagues, any further discussion on this item? Please call the roll.
Mayor, this is a non-emergency. Did you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for reminding me. This is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you. All right. We have made it across the time threshold. Item 906, please. Time certain 9:45.
Consider appeal by Leonard Gianette, Yvonne Meekums, and Mary Henry de Tisson against the Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions the Alamo Manhattan four-block development in the South Waterfront subdistrict of the Central City Plan District, LU20-102914-DZMADGW.
Thank you. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to put on the record that I've had the opportunity to review the public record and am prepared to vote on this issue today.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Colleagues, on September 10th, we held a hearing on this appeal, and on October 1st, we tentatively voted to deny the appeal. May I have a motion to deny the appeal, uphold the decision of the Design Commission to approve the project as modified, and adopt the findings?
So moved.
Can I get a second? I will second it. We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty. We have a second from myself. Any further discussion on this item? Keelan, please call the roll.
You Daly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Land use decisions are discretionary choices on which reasonable people can disagree and often do. And I think that's what we have here is a disagreement. I believe that this building is too close to the Greenway, too tall, and will encroach on the feeling of the public Greenway. And I respect that my colleagues have an opposite opinion. Thank you to Stacey Monroe and all of the staff who worked so hard on this. No.
I was giving you a little space there to come back on that one.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, everyone. I want to thank Director Esau and the staff of BDS, the appellants, and my council colleagues for a thoughtful and engaging dialogue on this issue. I am a little confused right now on my vote, maybe a little paranoid after what just happened. But I think I got this right, and I will continue to hold to what I had at the last time. I vote no.
Hardesty?
No, I'm sorry. I vote yes, right? Yeah, I vote yes. Gosh, it's confusing.
It's really early, isn't it?
Well, it's early, but it's also kind of a double negative, so yeah.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The motion passes. Thank you all. Next item, 907. Oh wait, sorry, that's a time certain. We'll skip that. Let's please go to the regular agenda, item 913.
Approve application under the multiple unit limited tax exemption program under the inclusionary housing program for the 503 located at 2880 Southeast Stark Street.
Very good, colleagues. This is another multi. Do we have Dory on today or is it Shannon?
Good morning, Mayor. Dory is
none of the above. It's Matt Scheibold. Good morning.
Sub in. Good morning, Mayor, and good morning, Council.
Are you going to say more than that, or are we just going to Q&A? Oh, there you go. Okay.
Turn up the slides. Okay. Good morning. So this is another inclusionary housing project. It is the 503, which is a project outside of the central city. The developer, as you know, these are the options that developers can choose from under the mandatory inclusionary housing requirement in the city zoning code. And the developer has opted to pursue the 80% option. The project is located at 28th and Southeast Stark. It's a completely residential building with 30 units, and they are taking one of the simpler and cleaner options, which is just to provide the same unit composition as the overall building. The building has 25 one bedrooms and 5 studios. And so the inclusionary requirement will be 5 units, 4 bedrooms and 1 studio apartment. Overall, we see there is a rent discount based on current market rents for both the studio and one bedroom units. In exchange, the developer will be receiving this tax exemption if City Council approves it. And given that this is outside of the central city, the tax exemption will only apply to the affordable units and the portion of the residential space in the building that is linked to the regulated affordable units. Overall, we've given you a picture of what the rent discount is on average on a monthly basis, on an annual basis, and then the total projected over the 99 years of affordability and the total tax exemption over the life of the building for the 10 years is $49,000. In exchange, we get 5 of those units regulated for 99 years at 80% of the median income. And with that, I am happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions on this item? Keelan, do we have any public testimony?
No one signed up for this item.
Very good. Call the roll.
You, Daly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Commissioner, you're still muted.
It's not my morning, is it? Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Item 914, please.
Accept and appropriate award from the Department of Housing and Urban Development for a grant in the amount of $3,200,000 for the implementation of lead-based paint hazard control activities and administration, and $400,000 to address in-home health and safety hazards.
Very good. My run of show says Dana Shepherd is with us today from the Neighborhood Housing Program Manager. Dana, are you with us? It looks like you are.
I am with you. Let me go ahead and get my screen.
Very good. Good morning.
Good morning. All right. Is everyone able to see my slideshow?
Yep. Looks good.
All right. Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor. My name is Dana Shepherd. I'm the Neighborhood Housing Program Manager at the Housing Bureau, and I also have Denny Kelly on the line with me, Lead Grant Coordinator. So thank you for your time this morning. So we are here today in hoping that you'll accept and appropriate a 42-month award from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So this is for $3.2 million for the Lead Hazard Control Grant and $400,000 for Healthy Homes. And then we'd also ask that we be able to appropriate $325,000 for this particular fiscal year, 2021. Lead and Healthy Homes Grant. The Lead Paint Poisoning Prevention Program for households are for folks earning under 80% AMI, and it is focused on homes with children under the age of 6. And those are children that are either living in the home or visiting the home quite frequently. And then this is also available for homeowners and renters. It is a citywide program for homes pre-1978. And pre-1978 homes have the most, they're at risk for lead poisoning. So the grant will be serving over the 42 months, 185 low-income households. And 80 of those households will also receive the Healthy Homes Grant. I'd also just like to let you know for the previous, well, we're currently in a lead grant cycle right now that'll be ending a three-year grant cycle that ends, we're in the last quarter of that. And the average household lead grant amount is about $11,000. Again, this is a citywide program, and we target North and Northeast Portland. And the reason why we do that is because there's over 20,000 homes, and units that were built before 1940 in that area. And that is about 38% of all housing units in the area. So that puts about 7,700 kids under age six at risk of lead poisoning. The community impact. So we partner with culturally specific affordable housing organizations to assist with lead poisoning prevention. And we also leverage lead grant with the other PHB and community administered home repair and weatherization programs. Grant funds are available for lead certified trainings for Section 3 residents. Just in partnership, I also just want to ask that or state that we have a partnership with the Water Bureau for a match. And there's several other community organizations, culturally specific organizations like Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives and Hacienda that help us and partner with us in doing this work. Here, I'll go ahead and let you take a look at the community impact, and this is for the current cycle that we're in, the current lead grant that we're in, and that's 150 households. All right, I'll keep going. So we just wanted to give you all just a visual of some of the work that's done in this current grant cycle that we're in. This is in the King neighborhood with a homeowner that received the lead grant. And also the Portland Housing Bureau's home repair loan. The home repair loan, which you all, well, some of you have already heard about, is a $40,000 loan that's administered right there at the Housing Bureau. And this particular homeowner had a grandchild that was at risk of lead poisoning. I do, again, let you all know that we did just complete one home that the child had elevated blood levels, and then we are going into another one. So definitely we were finding, and that's through referrals from Multnomah County Health Department. That's where we do get a lot of referrals from as well. So when that triggers them, they will contact the Housing Bureau. And here's some more pictures. All right, before I go to questions, I just want to ask Danny, the lead grant coordinator, if there's anything else that needs to be added that I may have forgotten.
No, that looked great, thank you.
Okay, any questions, Commissioners, Mayor? Very good.
Colleagues, any questions? Oh, wait, I don't have my participant. Commissioner Hardesty has a question.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you so much, Dana, for that very succinct and informative presentation. My question is really around geographic location. I certainly understand why the work has been focused in North and Northeast Portland. Clearly, there are a lot of distressed properties in Inner Northeast that would benefit from this. But my understanding is that East Portland also has a significant level of older homes that could benefit from this program. Do you see an opportunity for the expansion of this program in the future? Because I think we're all aware that a lot of people have left North and Northeast Portland because of its unaffordability at this time. And they have shifted into East Portland. So is there any opportunity for expansion?
Absolutely, thank you. And I'd like to clarify. So we did apply for this grant under what's called the highest lead-based paint abatement needs grant category. This is a citywide program, and we've just simply targeted North Northeast Portland, and that somewhat is aligned with the North Northeast strategy as well in support of that. However, it is a citywide program, and Danny, along with the program assistant, will be doing outreach, and we are definitely going to East Portland for that outreach. So it is citywide. We just focused on targeting that area because of the number of units that were built before 1941.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Dana Shepherd. That was a great report. I agree. It was really succinct, and it made me want to ask a question. So you stated that there were high lead levels for a child. And then my curiosity is, will there be follow-up tests after we do the good work, like a year or two later, to see that the lead levels go down from that same person? Just want to know what the follow-up data is like.
That is a great question. Danny, do you happen to have the answer to that?
Well, I think the county has the lead program, so they keep track of all that. And then I think they do continual testing and follow-up with the homeowners. And that particular case had two kids at the same house. So I think that they are, you know, pretty on it and following up with those people.
And okay. If we can make sure that is the case, we'll make sure what the county's protocols are for following up on that, since they do.
Yeah, it'll be great to see the impact of this result. And the only way we'll know that is to get the follow-up test. So thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Colleagues, any further questions on this item? Keelan, is there any public testimony?
No one signed up.
All right, very good. This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Daly.
Aye.
Fritz.
This is really good work. Thank you very much. Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Great work. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Next up, we'll go back to the second time certain item 907, please.
Assess benefited properties for park improvements in the Portland Open Space Sequence Local Improvement District.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. The Portland Open Space Sequence Restoration Project represents the culmination of many years of determined efforts towards a public-private partnership to restore a renowned series of public spaces designed by Lawrence Halprin that are vital to our city. The Halprin Landscape Conservancy, having been active for over the past 19 years in increasing awareness of the sequence as an important city and natural and national cultural resource, was uniquely positioned to garner the support of the district property owners to form a local improvement district. The Conservancy is continuing its mission by providing long-term stewardship of the sequence and its ongoing activation and maintenance. And I just want to personally thank those who look after this amazing treasure in our city. In the good old days when I was going down to City Hall, I often would get off the bus at the Development Services building and walk through the sequence as a really great start to my day. So thank you very much. I appreciate the work that's gone into it already and the work that will be done. And I'm now introducing Parks Director Adina Long.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners Udaly, Ryan, and Hardesty. This project was unique in that it was the first time a local improvement district has been used for capital improvements to existing parks. On behalf of the Parks Bureau, I'd like to sincerely thank the Halprin's Landscape Conservancy, the city's LID program, and the property owners who participated. This demonstration of civic pride and working together is key to carrying into the future the parks and recreation system that Portlanders expect and deserve. Significant improvements were made through the combination of local improvement district funding and city funding that will extend the lives of these historic parks and fountains. Our staff are here to show you some of the improvements made through this project. Now I'd like to introduce Andrew Abbey, the city's LID administrator.
Good morning, council members. I'm Andrew Abbey. I'm the city's local improvement district administrator, and I'm pleased to announce to council that we did not receive any objection to final assessment of the Portland Open Space Sequence LID. I'm going to turn it over to my Portland Parks and Recreation colleague, Sandra Bertsos, who will have a presentation for you. Thank you.
Hello. Nice to see everyone this morning. This is Sandra Bertsos with Parks. Can you see my screen?
Not yet. Okay. No, wait.
Now?
Now we can, yeah.
Okay, great. There we go. Okay, good, it's working. So a little bit of history on the Portland Open Space Sequence. Over 50 years ago, the Portland Development Commission redeveloped a 55 block area of the city as the first large urban renewal district. In what would become a tradition of making public space a part of Portland's urban fabric, PDC set aside three full blocks and a series of adjoining streets for parks and garden line pedestrian walks. To design the parks and walks, PDC hired one of the most visionary landscape architecture firms of the 20th century, Lawrence Halperin and Associates. From right to left on your screen, the Source Fountain, Lovejoy Fountain, Petty Grove Park, and Ira Keller Forkert Fountain, and the adjacent pedestrian malls shown in the lighter green, collectively called the Portland Open Space Sequence, changed the history of American urban space, pioneering a path from passive parks and squares to the more dynamic participatory merging of parks and art. The intention of the Portland Open Space Sequence restoration project was to make critical improvements to the four parks infrastructure, restore key elements to the original design intent, enhance nighttime safety and security, enhance site accessibility, install energy efficient electrical systems, and improve site drainage and plumbing. I'm going to quickly go through some before and after images to try to give you a sense of some of the improvements the project accomplished. Keep in mind, there was a lot of underground storm drain and electrical work that's not visible on the surface. This is the Source Fountain Plaza. Custom slot trench drains grates were all replaced. Now we're at Lovejoy Fountain Park. Significant pavement restoration and tree replanting. ADA barriers and trip hazards created by heaved and broken pavement caused by the tree roots was repaired throughout. A total of over 600 linear feet, so that's the length of three city blocks of custom Halperin trench drain grates were replaced in Lovejoy Fountain Park and the Source Fountain Plaza. In addition to a very sizable fountain fill pipe leak repair by park staff prior to the LID project's construction, the leak repair shown in these photos, along with fountain concrete joint sealing accomplished by the LID project, should result in a significant reduction in water use in the future. Removal of biological growth that can impact concrete's integrity over time. Now we're at Petty Grove Park. There are a number of custom design features in the historic Halperin Parks. The linear concrete trench drains at the Source and Lovejoy, as well as these 16 drain grates at Petty Grove, are examples that required creative solutions to try to meet ADA, drainage, and maintenance requirements while still preserving the original aesthetic design intent. Drainage and pavement restoration at Petty Grove. Clogged and broken storm lines caused flooding in the pedestrian mall by Petty Grove at a highly used entrance to an adjacent property. These images are just one example, but tree roots were found to be a common cause at both Petty Grove and Lovejoy of blocked storm pipes, as well as cracked and heaved pavement. Now we're at Ira Keller Forkert Fountain Park. This shows biological growth removal, concrete restoration, new stairway lighting, and new ADA handrails. Biological growth removal and restored simple ground plane planting similar to the original design. There were numerous structural repairs made at Keller where there were deep fissures and exposed electrical conduit and rebar. The original fountain and site lighting was a magnificent display. Before the LID project, there were not many working light fixtures, making for a fairly dark and unsafe visitor experience. New energy efficient LED fountain and park lighting reestablished the nighttime splendor. These are a couple of fun before and afters. On the left is a 1970 photo of Ira Keller and designer Angela Denejeva, who worked for Lawrence Halprin at the time and turned Halprin's conceptual vision for Keller Fountain into reality. On the right side are photos from the 2019 fabulous Big Splash celebration orchestrated by the Halprin Landscape Conservancy at the project's completion. Angela Denejeva, as shown receiving flowers from Bob Nato, was a special guest speaker and was absolutely glowing seeing how her design work has delighted visitors for the past 49, now 50 years. Also shown is a ribbon cutting ceremony featuring Halprin Landscape Conservancy's Executive Director Karen Whitman, the Conservancy's Chair Bob Nato, Lake Commissioner Fish, Parks Director Adina Long, and a couple of our park rangers. I want to personally thank the Halprin Landscape Conservancy and all the LID participants for helping to restore these internationally renowned public open spaces. It's been an unforgettable honor to work on the project. And now I will turn it back over to Andrew Abbey. Thank you.
Good morning again, Council members. Andrew Abbey for the record. I wanted to thank Commissioner Fritz for having the opportunity to work with Portland Parks and Recreation on this local improvement district. Commissioner Fritz, this is the last LID I'll be bringing to you in your long tenure on the City Council. It's been a distinct privilege to work on this LID, not only with you, but also with the Halprin Landscape Conservancy and with park staff. I wanted to now introduce Bob Nato of the Halprin Landscape Conservancy for our invited testimony this morning. He has been a board member for over a decade, serving as the president, and is currently serving as the board chair. The Nato name is and always has been connected to the needs and opportunities in Portland. Southwest Nato Parkway, named after his father, also is the new dividing line between Southwest and South Portland, and South Portland was created on May 1st of this year. Bob Nato's leadership with the restoration project is noteworthy, and he is leading the Adopt a Park program, which will launch in early 2021. These projects are a testament to the well-known phrase that appears on Skidmore Fountain: good citizens are the riches of a city. Bob?
Before you turn it over to Bob, Andrew, Commissioner Ryan has his hand raised.
I'm sorry, that was from the last presentation.
I'm sorry. Mr. Nato, welcome.
Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, on behalf of the Landscape Conservancy and all the property owners who joined this voluntary LID, I want to thank you for being our steadfast partners for over the last 6 years as we completed this $4 million capital improvement project. When the restoration planning began over a dozen years ago, it really was the dream of a handful of landscape architects who were the founders of the Landscape Conservancy, and someone who needs to be recognized. It really is John Russell, who has been an advocate for the Fountain District and the park system for many, many years, and has been a financial backer of the Conservancy from day one. The work began in earnest in 2014, when, armed with a capital improvement plan, we started knocking on every neighborhood door and shaking every money tree to find the funding to do the restoration. And it really was Commissioner Nick Fish who came up with the idea of getting a voluntary LID organized to pay for the project. And really, I think it was fitting that he was at that commemoration ceremony with Angela Dejanovic, who, between Angela, who designed the park 50 years ago, and Nick, who preserved it for another 50 years or more. I think it was a great event. Anyway, this was a real public-private partnership because the city stepped up and funded about half of the $4 million cost. And in the end, when we reopened the doors, we also saw a future for the Landscape Conservancy to assure that these parks will once again be populated because they're clean, safe, and welcoming. With all of the new contacts and supporters that we've gathered over 6 years, we're now expanding our scope, and you'll hear more about our Adopt a Park program, which shares the maintenance and cleaning with Park Bureau personnel, which we hope to launch in 2021. And just as Halpern himself thought of the design as choreographed activity through the outdoor spaces, we're now reimagining the parks as performance stages for cultural activities, all representing our diverse civic life in Portland. So look for our new park programming in the coming years. And lastly, I want to thank my fellow directors, past and current, who volunteered their time and money to this project. We have a short video. Last month, the Oregon AIA awarded its AIA Fellows 2020 award to Halpern Landscape Conservancy. And they produced this video, which I want to share with you and the council.
This is Portland's first urban renewal district from the 60s, and it's a project of the Portland Development Commission and Ira Keller and a group of basically Portland business people that collaborated with a couple international architects.
The Portland Open Space sequence, it's the story of the quartet of public plazas and open space that redefined American city and set a bold new precedent for the urban landscape architecture.
Out of these 80 city blocks that were cleared for urban renewal, they built a series of apartment buildings and office buildings and created a sequence of parks and fountains starting up at the south end and coming all the way down to where we're standing.
We're standing in the Keller Fountain at this particular point, and this was the third park that was part of the Halpern sequence.
At a time in late 50s and early 60s, there was an enormous exodus from the downtown area. Portland put its case forward and was awarded $12 million in housing fund to be able to reinvest back into the city and reinvest into the downtown. The foresight of the visionaries, civic visionaries at the time, was also to bring their own a landscape architect at a time renowned from San Francisco area, Halpern and Associates, to develop their own unique vision of bringing nature back into the city. And so the sequence became actually the soul and the heart of the city.
This was meant to be a place of activity, of bringing people together, of being a focus of community life.
The idea was that spaces shouldn't be looked at. They should be interactive, they should be played, they should be celebrated. They should be both contemplative and they should be exuberant and vibrant. And knowing that the city should be the stage for the celebration, for the healing, for everyone.
That was very evident on the opening day, when this place was lined with people, old, middle-aged, and kids. And this is where Mr. Halpern said, we're all in this together, and jumped into the water with his shoes on, which then everybody else jumped in at the same time. But it was a new beginning and a new definition of what open space in Portland is to be.
There are architects that come from around the world to see Halpern's work here, because this is where some of his best work was done.
The property owners surrounding the sequence should really be credited for the idea that this was their front yard. And so when they come out to have a lunch or they enjoy it in the morning or evening at home, they also notice that over the years that city has turned its back onto these assets.
So they formed the Landscape Conservancy really with three things in mind. One was to try and protect the architectural integrity of Halprin's original design and concept. Secondly, to try and enhance it by encouraging the property owners around it to take care of their property. And I think finally, to try and create events and activities in the sequence that would bring the rest of Portland.
It wasn't just about fixing the physical assets of it, but what was missing of it is the activity, the activation of the park, seeing people here. And with lack of people, there's also not vibrancy in the city too.
What we did is brought property owners who are adjacent to these parks and the sequence together to voluntarily tax themselves to pay for the work to fix the parks.
This was kind of the spawning ground or the birthplace of the public-private partnership. And that now has continued to evolve as we're going further and further into building our city. We, the people, are the ones that own our parks, and we, the people, are the ones that should be able to maintain that park and kind of govern its operation. That then allows us then to have equitable programs, bring people in, give opportunities for many people to use that open space.
So after we finished the renovation, I think the question that everybody had was how do we keep the parks from 50 years from now needing to do it all over again? And one of the things that we're committed to is a project we call Adopt a Park, which lets us help the Park Bureau to do enhanced maintenance and take better care of the parks than they would otherwise be able to do.
We want to be able to have the long history in Portland too, that it's both celebrated internationally, but also held very close in regard and in our hearts here in Portland.
For me, it is a place where I can come for inspiration. And it's a place, I think, that kind of honors design, what you can impact as far as design. And it isn't just for today, tomorrow, it is for many generations to come.
Thank you very much, Bob, for sharing the video with us. I wanted to just echo Bob's comments about the late Commissioner Fish. It was his idea to put this local improvement district together. For every dollar that the City General Fund contributed, the LID was able to more than double that contribution to really make an exponentially better impact on the Halprin sequence. So it was a distinct privilege to work on this local improvement district with Portland Parks and Recreation. It was also a distinct privilege to be at that ribbon cutting last year. I know Commissioner Fish was in a lot of pain at that ribbon cutting, but he certainly had a big wide smile on his face when the fountains were turned on and all of the work had been completed. So that concludes our presentation today and our invited testimony. And I think at this point, we're just turning it over to anyone who may have signed up to testify on this item. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Andrew. Andrew, thank you, Bob. Thank you, everybody, for your incredible work on this. And thank you for remembering our late, great friend and colleague, Commissioner Nick Fish. He would have been proud to see this. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, everybody. What a great presentation. What a great project. Thank you, Bob, for both being here and for your leadership on this. Thank you, Sandra and Andrew, for yours on the city side. Fitting. And I think, Andrew, that this last LRD that you're bringing while I'm on the council is such a beautiful one. Not that I don't think sidewalks in outer neighborhoods are beautiful as well. But this one, when I first heard about this project, I was questioning the investment of city money in an area that many people would consider affluent. And it was brought to my attention that this is an area where people of color and people from low-income communities come to recreate, to play in the fountains, to enjoy the beautiful art. So it definitely is the folks who are part of the LID and who were able to contribute to the funding have done a great thing, a philanthropic thing for the entire city. And I just thank you all. I was really happy to be a part of this. I also remember that when we adopted the LID, there was one adjacent property that decided they didn't want to be in the voluntary LID. And we said, no, actually, your property is going to benefit and you need to be in it. So I think that was the right decision, and I'm glad to hear that there are no remonstrances at the end of the project, and it was really great to work on it with Commissioner Fish. I also thank Randy Gregg, who really extolled the virtues of the Halperin sequence for me, and is now the leader of the Portland Parks Foundation and will do many good things, I'm sure, with the Adopt-a-Park program. So just thanks very much to everybody. I'm really happy to have this completed.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Keelan, has anybody signed up to testify on this issue?
No one has signed up, Mayor.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you all for this. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading, but I want to thank all of the people in this community who helped make this vision a reality. This is fantastic work. And Bob, one thing that came to mind when you were giving your presentation is how the private sector really led on this. The public sector was a willing and capable partner, but the inspiration for this originally, as now, came from our private sector partners and your work and the work of your board. And you mentioned John Russell. I know he has been a stalwart and consistent advocate for this part of the city and the Halperin sequence in particular. And I recognize that none of this would be before us today, but for the fact that there are people in this community who live and work and recreate in this community who bring these ideas to the fore and make them happen. And I hope the good work that you've done here in this part of the city inspires other leaders and other private sector partners throughout the city to see the value and the leverage that they can bring to the table to get things done on behalf of all of us. So I just want to thank you for your incredible leadership. And I really appreciate the historical perspective that's being brought to this presentation today. That's extremely informative to me, and it helps give us a baseline and brings us up to date on the current understanding of why this particular sequence is important, not only to the city of Portland, but I love the fact that it also put a national spotlight on Portland in terms of new innovative thinking to keep our downtown area vibrant. And I don't think it takes too much of a genius to draw the line from that history to today's situation in urban America and Portland in particular. And once again, the need for a renaissance and the need to focus and think creatively and innovatively and in partnership with the private sector about how we keep our urban areas vibrant and viable for the years to come. So this was a very, I thought, excellent and timely presentation, and I appreciate it. Commissioner Ryan, I believe you have your hand raised. Is that correct?
It is, Mayor. Thank you. I meant to jump in earlier. You said many things that I would agree with. I just wanted to add a couple statements, and some is just reflecting back on my childhood and being a kid that really loved downtowns for some reason. And I remember when those fountains went in, and I was cringing, hoping I wouldn't see a picture of scrawny little me in those photographs, and I didn't. But I just wanted to acknowledge how big the private investment was and how important those partnerships are. It was over $2 million raised from the private sector, and I know that took a lot of work. I want to shout out to my a colleague of mine that I've learned a lot from in life, Karen Whitman, who I know is very involved in this project, and I know that when Ms. Whitman gets involved in something, it usually you usually get to the finish line. And so I'm not surprised. And I would just want to add to the mayor's comments how timely it is for us to have a story like this being told, because I would say in my lifetime, we're at a similar place in terms of what I experienced as a little kid in the early 70s. And we have to, you know, get people downtown and experience joy again. And there's nothing like this architecture that will go well beyond my lifetime. And you made a really good testimony today on how important it is for us to protect this and to covenant as we go forward. So I'm just thrilled with this project, and it's very timely. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner Ryan. Adina, I had Director Long, I had another question about this. And all of these photos and some of the original intent and the historical video that we saw indicated that this was designed intentionally as an active space. It wasn't just supposed to be something to look at and stand to the side and be in awe of the great architecture. It was actually intended to be used. It was intended to be walked on, performed on, climbed. I mean, there was even a climbing ladder at one point in one of the photographs in the fountain, and people were encouraged to wade and swim in it. And one of the things that's changed over 50 years is we have many, many more attorneys and more liability requirements. Is there any intentionality going forward to make these fountains more accessible to people who want to wade in them? Where are we with that? Because on a hot day, let's be honest, we don't have many swimming pools in this city. They're hard to fund. We all learned that in the last several budget cycles. Are there parts of these fountains where it's okay for people to swim, or is there something we need to do to encourage people to be able to wade in them? What's the current thinking? And you may not have an answer today. Maybe I'll just put it out there as a rhetorical question, but, and Director Long may have already left us. All right, so I'll put it out there as a rhetorical question. But it just occurs to me the more ways that people can use and enjoy the assets of the city, the more people we have advocating for and wanting to support those assets. That's just sort of my random thought for the day. Commissioner Fritz, thank you for saving.
I personally having some internet connectivity challenges, so maybe that's what happened for Director Long. I would say that we have the signs saying, I don't know what exactly they say, but basically wade at your own risk. And we don't have rangers enforcing that. So I think, as you say, we're trying to get the balance between, yes, they were intended to be active places, and minimizing the city's risks. I'm sure that that's something that will be continued to be discussed moving forward.
Awesome. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. I appreciate that. All right. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you, everyone. And that leaves us with, believe it or not, only one other item. And that's item 915.
Adopt citywide disability equity goals to guide city policies, plans, and procedures.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Colleagues, I am super excited to be bringing this item to you today. As you all know, the city's equity program, it has a focus on race and also a second focus on disability, because we recognized, thanks to the disability communities back in 2011, that focusing on race doesn't necessarily take care of some of the accommodations that are needed for people of color, even though people of color are disproportionately affected by disabilities. And again, when you take care of the folks who need accommodations, that it gets better for everyone, as I mentioned in a previous item. So we adopted citywide racial equity goals in 2015. And so it has taken more time to get to the citywide disability goals, and I'm just very glad that the staff has worked on it so hard to get it done before I leave. And with that, I will turn it over to Nicole Sharon.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Good morning. My name is Nicole Sharon. I am the ADA Title II and Disability Equity Manager for the city. I want to recognize that today I am presenting to some of you for the last time, and I want to thank you for your service to the city. I also want to recognize that I'm presenting to you, Commissioner Ryan, for the first time, and so hello. We are here today to ask the council to commit not just the Office of Equity, but the entire city to do better in its service to people with disabilities, to move beyond basic compliance under the ADA to something more robust, through disability equity goals. In 2015, this council adopted racial equity goals. And since that time, we have seen a shift in the way we do business at the city by making sure BIPOC communities are a priority. In 2020, there are more people working at the city that represent the diversity of the city by race and ethnicity than ever before. There have been tremendous policies to come out of housing, water, and contracting that serve to reduce some of the long-standing disparate impacts BIPOC communities have experienced living in Portland. Much of the push to establish the racial equity goals came out of the Portland and comprehensive plans, along with community-driven plans, which included the State of Black Portland and the People's Plan. While both the Portland and comprehensive plans, which had members of the disability community at the table, they do include disability equity goals. Yet we have yet to establish citywide accountability practices that allow us to see how we're doing with those goals. And we just don't have the data. And part of this is because historically, disability data is limited. The Census Bureau only collects data on disability through the American Community Survey. And that only started in 1999. It also collects through the Survey of Income and Program Participation. And that began in 2014. And if any of you have actually taken the most recent census, you know there's no question around disability. So part of the reason we're really excited about moving this forward now is that our partners over in Civic Life have begun planning a very detailed data collection process that will give us the baseline disparities that we can use for future evaluation and accountability. This survey will allow us to see the actual numbers of how far we've been able to move the needle on disability equity. There's another reason we're asking you to support this resolution today. During response of the COVID-19 virus, you were presented with an equity tool that served as a framework for the response. I'm not sure that this would have happened if the racial equity goals hadn't been passed in 2015. In fact, the plan opening line under the expectation is the City of Portland adopted equity commitments through the citywide racial equity goals and strategies in 2015. So my co-lead, Alan Del Torre, and I were in the ECC, and we did manage to get a few elements in that equity tool around aging and disability. But I really think that had we not been there, it probably wouldn't have made it in. And this kind of highlights what the problem with disability equity at the city is. And it's that so many of the folks that work here have a lot of able-bodied privilege. And so it's not that people don't care about disability. It's just that it's often forgotten or it's an afterthought. The problem with that around COVID-19 is that it disproportionately impacts people of color, those living with disability, along with other intersections of disability, especially people living with autoimmune conditions and those over the age of 60. And this is a situation where we're not just talking about service delivery, we are talking about people's lives. So, today, we're asking you to commit to citywide goals and values. We will, over the next year, be back here with the admin rules for key areas, including a lot that fall under ADA Title II. We'll also come back with strategies that are developed with the community at the table, which has been really difficult through the pandemic. We know that the community has wanted this for a long time. We actually began a process in 2016 with the Portland Commission on Disability. Unfortunately, there was not a lot of bandwidth from members and frankly, some disagreement between members. And as COVID-19 continues, we have been focused more on getting people's basic needs met. It's kind of impossible to have community participation around civic concerns when people are really just trying to access adequate healthcare and or pay rent. So here's the truth, COVID isn't going away anytime soon. And making this commitment to disability equity now, it really helps us who are doing the work push for more inclusivity around COVID response and everything else we do at the city. I'm going to hand it over to Jonathan Simeone now. He has been an instrumental part in helping us move the work. And not just because he's very knowledgeable and very skilled, he brings to us the lived experience of being blind. And having a staff member at the city who is blind has actually unveiled so many ways that we are actually failing to get information and even just general digital access accessible for people with disabilities. Jonathan?
Morning, everyone. My name is Jonathan Simeone. I am the citywide ADA Title II Policy Coordinator, and I work in the Office of Equity and Human Rights. I am going to share my screen, so just give me a moment. Can you see that?
Yeah, yeah. Looks good.
Okay, great. Thank you. So the purpose of this slide is simply to demonstrate the number of folks who identify as having a disability in the Tri-County area. That's Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties, and it's roughly 19.6%. The data on this slide and the following two slides was generously shared with me by PSU's Institute on Aging and will come to council in a report in 2021. The data is not meant to show causality, but it is meant to show the relationship between disability, education, earnings, poverty, and education. Here we have education, and it shows the things I want to highlight are that roughly 56%, if you add the numbers together, of people with disabilities have a high school degree or less. And only 7.2% of people with disabilities in our area have a bachelor's degree or greater. This slide demonstrates earnings. And here we can see that 12.6% of people with disabilities in our area have earned less than $5,000, and only 3.2% have earned $75,000 or more. This slide shows poverty level, and what I want to highlight here is that 27.7% of people with disabilities live at or below the federal poverty level. Now we're getting into the goals that are created by the resolution we have before us today. The first goal will be that all activities, programs, and services offered by Portland will provide for equitable outcomes and opportunities in accordance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Our second goal addresses the fairness in hiring and promotions of people with disabilities within the government of Portland, and is also in accordance with the model employer resolution passed by the city in 2012. Our final goal of the resolution is designed to create fairness in contracting and the opportunity of contracting for people with disabilities who want to do business with the city. These goals have been designed to very much mirror the racial equity goals that council adopted in 2015, with the obvious difference that the first goal addresses ADA Title II access, which was not obviously part of the racial equity goals. This slide talks about some of the things that may be brought to council or produced by the Office of Equity and Human Rights to further implement the goals that we are talking about here today. Some of the things that could be worked on include the development of an accessible information and communication technology policy, which would develop citywide standards for the determining what constitutes accessible digital content, accessible software, hardware, and the like. Another one would be to establish how the city will fulfill its effective communication requirement under the ADA, which means that communication with someone with a disability must be as effective as is communication with someone without a disability. We may also work on developing policies and procedures around how the city will grant reasonable accommodations and how the city will modify its practices, programs, and procedures to ensure the full integration of people with disabilities in Portland's activities, programs, and services. At this point, I'm going to turn the presentation over to my colleague, Anna E. Keenan, from the Bureau of Human Resources.
Thank you, Jonathan, and I really appreciate that you'll be helping me with the slides moving forward. So good morning, and my name is Anna E. Keenan, as Jonathan has just said, and I am the city's Disability Resources and Employment Specialist in BHR. I very much appreciate the opportunity to support this resolution, particularly the citywide disability equity goal of fairness in hiring and promotion. To begin, I'd like to briefly share that as of yesterday, November 17th, there are currently 337 employees who self-identify as having a disability, about 4.5% of the city's workforce. To fully understand where we are today, it's important to look at some historical context. In 2012, the city passed a model employer resolution affirming its commitment to become a model employer for people with disability. This was followed by the adoption of a model employer strategic plan in 2016, in which it was stated that BHR would lead the city's efforts to become a more inclusive and accessible employer with support from the Office of Equity, Human Rights, the Office of Community and Civic Life, as well as other stakeholders. Next slide, please. So all of this led to the creation of the Disability Employment Program in spring 2018. In the past 3 years or so, BHR has implemented several of the goals stated in the strategic plan. For example, we dramatically improved the accuracy of employee disability data through a citywide survey in summer 2019, which was followed by improved data capture during the onboarding process for new employees. So it is important to know that when we began the survey, only 1.7% of our workforce formally self-identified as being disabled. After the survey, this percentage more than doubled up to 3.9% of our workforce. And again, today we are at 4.5%. Also of interest is that at the time of the survey last summer, 5.6% of managers and supervisors self-identified as having a disability. Next slide, please. Aside from the survey, BHR has also developed a central reasonable employment accommodation system, not just for employees with disabilities, but also for employees who are pregnant or observe religious practices. As part of this work, we launched the city's first policy on reasonable employment accommodation, created a central fund to support disability accommodation, and provided intensive accommodations training to HR business partners and other city staff. Since April 2019, BHR has successfully processed over 100 accommodation requests from employees. In addition, a new program called Access to Work will address the strategic plan's recommendation to support innovative inclusion of people with developmental disability. Access to Work is designed to provide equitable entry-level employment opportunities for people with disabilities who benefit from longer learning and training periods. It's due to launch in summer 2021. Finally, through BHR, the city also offers a project search internship program for people with intellectual and or developmental disability. Our third program year is due to begin in fall 2021. So BHR and I are really excited to continue expanding the city's disability employment program. We've been able to accomplish a lot in 3 years. And these equity goals, particularly related to hiring and promotion, will continue to uplift our efforts in partnering and collaborating with all city bureaus to support fair and equitable hiring and employee experiences for people with disabilities, particularly for those who have multiple or intersectional identities, such as Black, Indigenous, and people of color with disabilities, and or LGBTQIA and two-spirit people with disabilities. So thank you again for your time.
Now we'll hear from Joanne Johnson in the Bureau of Community and Civic Life.
Good morning, Honorable Mayor and Commissioners. First, I'd like to thank you for making the time for this resolution amidst the chaos we're all experiencing. I know you're dealing with a lot right now, and it means a lot to me that we're taking the time to talk about disability and equity for disabled Portlanders. Over the last 4 years, the Disability Program in Civic Life has led a number of efforts to support accessible anti-racist engagement for disabled Portlanders. In 2017 and 2018, we developed and facilitated two Disability Power PDX leadership cohorts. These multicultural, cross-racial, intergenerational cohorts were opportunities for Portlanders to learn how to better engage government and activate for change. We've also spearheaded a partnership between Portland State University and Real Choice Initiative for the soon-to-launch Disability Equity and Engagement Study. As Nicole shared, baseline demographic and equity data is sorely needed for Portland's disability communities, and we're looking forward to identifying the ways in which the city can eliminate barriers to full and meaningful engagement in City of Portland decision-making practices. Just this week, we've closed out applications for the disability program's Disability Leadership Sponsorship and Grant Opportunity, where we identified disability communities living at the intersections of race, immigration status, houselessness, and more as a program priority. Finally, the disability program, alongside Civic Life's mental health, public involvement best practices, and advisory boards and commissions program, has been part of co-designing and implementing Adapt to Impact. This collaborative effort aims to transform citywide engagement practices to be more effective, accessible, and anti-racist. And it centers meaningful relationships with underengaged communities, including Portland's BIPOC and disability communities, and especially BIPOC disabled people, as a measure of success. I share these efforts with you to demonstrate the many creative ways in which our city continues to push for meaningful access and equity for Portland's disability communities. We've hosted cohorts to teach people how to effectively get their needs met by the city. We've resourced community organizations to build capacity. We've committed to studying and reporting on the gaps in equity and access. And we've developed an internal collaborative to support our Bureau colleagues in accessible, anti-ableist, anti-racist community engagement. And I haven't even mentioned the Aging and Disability Project's immense efforts over the last 8 months to support effective communication and get protective supplies and other resources to Portland's disability communities amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. White supremacy manifests in many ways, including in systemic ableism. This systemic lack of access is most harmful to disabled people also experiencing oppression because of their race, immigration status, housing status, sexual orientation and gender identity, income, and more. While one resolution cannot resolve the complexities of institutional ableism and its manifestations, it is a start. Even more important is the institutional commitment this resolution represents. Your commitment today by passing this resolution will be yet another tool that we can use to advance our city values of anti-racism, equity, communication, collaboration, transparency, and fiscal responsibility. Your commitment to this resolution could be a small step towards justice. And I'd like to turn it back over to Nicole Sharon for closing remarks.
Thanks, Joanne. I don't actually have closing remarks. I guess I will turn it back to you, council members, to see if you have questions.
Very good. Colleagues, at this point, does anybody have any questions that they'd like to raise? Keelan, do we have any folks signed up for public testimony on this item?
No one is signed up.
All right, well, this is a resolution. Commissioner Ryan just jumped in right here. Commissioner Ryan.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to get my voice in here to say how much I appreciated this report. And I wanted to personally just acknowledge Nicole's service to the city. I actually remember you probably don't remember me, but I worked at Portland State when you had quite an impact on President Bernstein's office, and you continue to have an impact on our city, and I don't know where you're going, but you will always be that person. So thank you for the very riveting report, and I'm so happy to know that we're behind it. That mean? No. Anyway, I just wanted to say that doing equity work for a couple decades, it's always obvious that when you get down into the data that the disparities, when we look at our BIPOC community connected to disability, there's always another gap. So this is such an important, it's so important to call this out, and I'm happy to hear that you have baseline data. So thank you.
Thank you. Very good. All right, this is a resolution. Keelan, please call the roll.
You, Daly.
Well, thanks everyone for that really excellent presentation. Excuse me. I mean, as some of you know, this is work that I've been urging the city to do for the 4 years that I've been on council. I'm really thrilled that we're doing this, but as the resident disability advocate sitting on the dais, I do want to point out that the ADA passed in 1990. It was 30 years ago. The Office of Equity and Human Rights was created by council in 2011. And we passed the citywide racial equity goals in 2015. This is long overdue. I'm very grateful to everyone who worked on this, including Director Smith. I am thrilled that we're finally giving the Office of Equity and Human Rights the power and capacity that they need to do the work that I think most Portlanders expected the Bureau to be doing in 2011-ish, whenever it was officially established. Lack of accessibility and inclusion is a vicious cycle. People with disabilities' voices are not heard. Their unique needs and challenges are never addressed, and they experience ongoing barriers to participation, leading to underrepresentation and lack of visibility, which allows the general population to remain blissfully unaware of the fact that there are tens of thousands of people in our community that are not able to enjoy their full rights that the rest of us get to take for granted. And I would like to note that while we do have 337 employees who have self-identified as having a disability, we know that number is much higher because of the prevalence of invisible disabilities, the stigma of identifying as disabled, and the fear that your needs will not be understood or met and will compromise your professional standing. So while 4.5% is significant, and we're certainly obligated to better serve those employees, rest assured that that number is higher. Normal is a myth. I want to point out that we all require accommodations to access, enjoy, and participate in civic and community life. For instance, if we were in chambers, most of us would need a chair. Nicole brings her own chair. We really need to change our mindset about accommodations. And I look forward to the day when we stop thinking of the work it takes to include the full diversity of our community as requiring special accommodations and really embrace a universal design mindset. I am, once again, just really grateful for this work. I'm going to be tracking it because, as I've learned, the city of Portland has a lot of wonderful aspirations and passes all sorts of innovative initiatives, and there aren't always people around to hold us accountable for following through on that work. And I'm very happy to vote aye.
Fritz.
Commissioner, thank you for those eloquent and powerful words and for your advocacy for people with disabilities for a very long time. And having started before you were on the council, I know that you will continue ongoing, as will I. And I very much appreciate the expertise of the staff we have here today, Nicole Sharon. The establishment of the first Commission on Disability was one of the first things I did when I got into the council in 2009, and it was entirely your work that I got to take credit for. So that was a good lesson in the privilege that I have as a commissioner and also as somebody who works with such amazing staff. And so thank you for your long dedication to all of our communities in Portland. Jonathan Simeone, you've done amazing work since you've been at the Office of Equity and Human.
Commissioner Fritz, you may have muted.
At what point in my long ramble did I get muted?
Maybe 30 seconds ago.
Well, then that's good. I'll start again by saying thank you to our amazing staff. And if I've said it before that was really weird. I'm having definite challenges today. So anyway, Nicole Sharon, thank you for your long leadership at the City of Portland and for your guidance to me as right from the start as a new commissioner through the end of my term. Jonathan Simeone, your additional expertise and experience and leadership at the Office of Equity and Human Rights has been instrumental in bringing this project to fruition. And I know that we're going to need you moving forward to continue to guide it. Commissioner Udaly mentioned that we're finally giving resources to these issues. I will forewarn the council for 2021 that there will be a request for additional resources because we need more experts. One of the sayings of the disability community is different differences, same struggle. And we need to have more people on city staff who are willing to engage on behalf of the communities that their lived experience connects with. Joanne Johnson, you've done amazing work in the Office of Community and Civic Life, and Anna E. Keenan in the Bureau of Human Resources. This is an example of staff in three different members of the council's offices working together to provide a unified policy that's come before the City Council. It is a policy that applies to all bureaus. So, and it's the responsibility of the bureaus to meet the goals that are in the policy. For instance, on facilities, that it's the responsibility of the bureau to figure out how to get the items on their transition plans done. And I know that my colleagues will continue to work on that. Thank you, Dr. Markeisha Smith. I know that you will continue to lead and guide this work, and you've been very instrumental in getting this policy to council, as has Claire Adamsick on my staff and also Cynthia Castro. We've been working together and the results are really, really good. And so with the policy adopted, now the hard work begins of implementing it, funding it, and supporting it. And I know that you will do that, colleagues. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you again for that powerful presentation. I really appreciated each and every one of you that presented. I want to acknowledge both Commissioner Fritz and the partnership with Commissioner Udaly to make sure that this is front and center. As someone that's had HIV since the early 80s, I had an experience, pretty deep experience, 1 year of my life being with disability and needing disability services. It was a real eye-opener I will never forget. And I promise that I will stay on this. And I feel confident with Dr. Smith overseeing this project, this work. And again, keep digging into that data. Jonathan, I really appreciated how you knitted together the education data with earnings data. That's relevant all the time. Anyway, I vote aye.
Hardesty.
All of us are only temporarily able, and it's important that we remember that if we're going to be an inclusive, equitable city, that every single person in our community has value. It was an incredible presentation. Thank you, Jonathan, Nicole, and the other incredible speakers that presented today. I guess my only cautionary tale is we haven't actually moved the ball much on race yet. So even though we heard a lot of accolades about race, the reality is that we have a lot more work to do to be the city that we say we want to be. And this moves the ball a little further. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I want to thank Commissioner Udaly in particular for her comments. There's nothing I can add to what she said. Truly heartfelt, meaningful, and eloquent words. And I appreciate that, Commissioner Udaly. I want to take a closer look at your rock collection there at some point too, by the way. That looks interesting. It's new. And I want to thank everybody who presented today. This is really solid work. And oftentimes we don't get to acknowledge or really appreciate the hard work you're putting into these programs until we actually see the final presentation at the end. And this is just exceptional work. I had high expectations, but you greatly exceeded them. And I want to thank you for the time and the energy. And I look forward to seeing all of this come to fruition. I'm happy to vote aye. The resolution is adopted. Colleagues, I am sorry to say there is one more item of business. I don't think it's a long item of business, but it came to my attention that we missed an amendment, a technical amendment on item number 914. That was the item related to the Department of Housing and Urban Development grant for lead-based paint remediation. I need to make a motion to reconsider to introduce the technical amendment and vote. So I move to reconsider item 914. Can I get a second?
So moved.
Second.
I have a second from Commissioner Hardesty. Call the roll, Keelan.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The item's under reconsideration. Colleagues, I'd like to move to amend Directive A to include reference to Exhibits A and E as provided in the Tuesday memo. Can I get a second?
Second.
Second.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? Keelan, please call the roll on the amendment.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment's adopted to the main motion is amended. Any further business or discussion? Seeing none, call Keelan, please call the roll on the ordinances amended.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted as amended. Thank you, colleagues. Sorry for the oversight. Keelan, that completes our business for this morning.
Yes, it does, Mayor.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a fantastic day. We'll talk soon. Y'all take care. We're adjourned.